Our theme tonight is The Empire Draws the Capital Home. Those of you who've read my financial coup d'etat story or many of the stories I've written, I've talked a lot about how the empire moved the investment out of the United States in the developed world during the 90s, reinvesting in the emerging markets and in space. Obviously, where our money goes, our military follows. So it's the globalization of another round of investment capitalism, all following the changes in the global trade rules with GATT. And so we've seen capital flow out. And now what we're seeing in the last year is as the money is poured into the BRIC nations, you see them flexing their political muscles. We've had currency wars, various countries in both the developed and emerging markets demanding that the U.S. ship their precious metals back, which are stored in the New York Fed or in the United States. The empire has decided to exercise a little reminder of who's boss. Another way to say it is what Mr. Global giveth, Mr. Global can taketh away. And the blood is being pulled into the center of the empire and the periphery is being squeezed. I don't see this as a change of fundamental direction. It's simply, you know, the pendulum swings back and forth in the rebalancing of the global economy. But the rebalancing is always going to occur in a way that the center of empire is made stronger by it, not weaker by it. And that's part of this little sort of whack back that's happening. It's not just the targeting of the tax havens. We've talked about that for the last couple weeks on the Salyer Report and my blog post, Make Way for the Killers and the Targeting and the Great Tax Haven Roundup. We'll explain more about that if you haven't plugged into that yet. But this is going to be the whole, you know, the world other than G7 is going to feel that. This pullback, and it's not just going to be the emerging markets that feel it, or the tax havens are certainly going to feel it. This is a process as it happens because the financial system is so centralized and so global. It's a process that right now you're looking at it roll across your balance sheet and income statement as we speak. So I want to start to connect the dots in tonight, and I'm going to be doing more of that in the wrap-up because I want you to see how what the empire is doing translates into sort of what you're feeling in different parts of your life and investment assets. So we've seen tremendous pressure on the U.S. to start sending gold back, whether to Germany, Venezuela, or other countries that have started to demand it. But we've also seen the unallocated bank pools under pressure and all sorts of other pressure about collateral shortages in the precious metal system, as well as other systems, but let's focus on precious metals now. The way to settle those accounts is, if you're a central bank or the big banks, is to basically shake down retail. Another way to say it, the way to settle all the fights among the G7 is to pull it away from everybody else. And yes, you can pass a law and say, we're going to confiscate all your gold, but that's much more expensive and difficult. It's much easier to short the price than drive the price down. I mean, it's even easier. I mean, it's so criminal in laws. It's hard to imagine. You know, your Goldman Sachs, you announce the price is going down, then, you know, but of course, after you've shorted the price, then with the help of all your clients and investors and the followers in the market, you drive the price down. You make a whole bunch of money, including the use of regulatory terror to do that. We'll talk about that in a bit. And then you cover your shorts, that generates profits, and that profit is what you need to fund the purchase of a gold, which you can now get at a much lower price, and then you just send the gold back to the guy who wants it. It's hard for some people to fathom that this goes on, but I think what we're very much watching is the insiders covering their shortages at the expense of the outsiders. Last week, we had Ben Bernanke, chairman of the Federal Reserve, suggest that they were going to stop printing QE at some point, which of course everyone knew, and all the folks who've been screaming at him for printing are now screaming that he's stopping. Somebody dubbed it the taper tantrum, as in taper off the purchases. If you look at what the empire is trying to do, they're trying to bring capital back. They have a lot of things going on here in the United States, which are strong for their fundamentals. They can bring capital back. And so when you stop buying up, and as you know, I think a lot of the purchases have been pulling the fraud off the bank's balance sheets. And if you look at the stocks of the big New York Fed member banks, they're basically where they were before the bailouts. So he's brought their balance sheets and their stocks all the way back, and they're in a perfect position to weather the storm In fact, it's going to be the, you know, the parts of not the center of Empire, but the periphery who gets squeezed as he does that. So he thinks he's got the center in good shape and he can start to withdraw from the periphery. Now, let me just remind you of a couple definitions, and a good place to go if you're not familiar with these terms is Wikipedia. When G7 is a group of countries that coordinate particularly financial policy, don't underestimate the power of that coordination when they make decisions. So if G7 makes decisions to start to engage in regulatory terrorism towards precious metal holders and they roll it out, then it rolls across all those countries lickety-split. It's like a hot knife through butter. And so don't underestimate the power of their ability to get together and change policy. So G7 is US, UK, France, Germany, Italy, Canada, and Japan. Russia is based, G8 is you add Russia, and then also the EU is not a full member, but has representation on G8. And then G20 includes another basket of countries that then bring you up to a major portion of the global economy. It's got Brazil, Indonesia, South Africa, India, China, Mexico, Turkey, South Korea, Argentina, Saudi Arabia, Australia, and the EU is a full member. So we saw the first decision on the tax havens being made by G7. Putin was not invited. It was not G8. Interestingly enough, when G8 finally met in London in the last week or two, Putin showed up at carrying his own water and food. I don't blame him at all. But now we see with Bernanke making the announcement that QE is going to taper, and we see tremendous drops in growth rate in China and Asia, announcing of slower growth in Brazil. Brazil taking off some of the policies that they had put on to stop hot money from coming into their bond market. Now they're looking for money to finance their bond market. We see announced the U.S. TOPS confidence survey on foreign investment replacing China. Numerous themes, that article is up on the blog. Numerous themes you've been hearing in the Saleri report for several years about the steps that are being taken to dramatically decrease the cost of manufacturing here, whether it's new fabrication technology or robotics, and of course the steps to increase domestic energy self-sufficiency, both oil and gas and renewables, the so-called oil card I've talked about a lot. But you see those themes played out in this article, and the extent to which in many respects, the United States remains very globally competitive, despite the continued difference in the cost of labor. Of course, labor has come down tremendously in real terms in the United States. Big squeeze. I can't say enough about the impact of the slowdown in China. Think of it as the sort of Walmart carry trade. China buys our treasury securities. Those treasury securities finance giving everybody checks, whether it's disability checks or social security checks. They go to Walmart. Walmart buys all the stuff from China. And then China needs commodities that come from Brazil. And so that's why there's a very intimate dance between those emerging markets and what's going on in the United States, including how we finance it. And anything that ramps down on that so-called carry trade is going to have a dramatic reverberation throughout the global economy. We see riots in Brazil and Turkey and around the world as the capital withdraws and the squeeze is in. Part of this dynamic, though, is technology. You're going to see more and more unemployment, more and more manufacturing done with robots and with using information technology and new technology to replace labor. And so we have this constant labor devaluation going on, and that's part of what's kept it possible for the central banks to print money to base currency without it turning into hyperinflation. We're offsetting monetary inflation with a variety of deflationary forces. A big one, of course, is labor. As I said, Putin is the stinker in all of this because Putin does not want to see the empire succeed. Putin does not want to be part of one world government. The Russians can be pretty ornery, and they, for many decades have been the stinker for the United States and the Anglo-American alliance. The latest round, of course, is what's going on in Syria, and Putin supplying oil and gas to Europe is a very important part of the Russian economy, and the last thing he wants is big competition out of the Middle East from Syria.